Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Shout out to our man James Hamm, Kings Insider, NBC Sports, with us here. James, it wouldn't be a pontificating with James Hamm segment if we in some way, shape, or form didn't bring up Marvin Bagley. Somehow Marvin Bagley keeps winding up for stuff, gives us stuff to talk about. Lately, his half-decent podcast, which we decided was deceptively named. I know you spent some time listening to that yesterday, James. Your thoughts on 60 minutes of talking without actually saying anything?
Yeah, half decent. I'm not sure. We may have to work on the name.
Seriously.
sometimes the best thing to do is just to not say anything. And I'll say this, I think I listened to like 50 something minutes just to make sure there wasn't anything more interesting than
round of applause for you, James. You got like, to the 50 minute mark.
I mean, there was a point where he talked about getting dumped at the mall when he was like in sixth or seventh grade. But my point is I made it through that much. And I don't think he said the word Kings the entire time. I do not think that that word slipped out of his mouth. I think we figured out where this is heading. It could go in a different direction. He could be here for another year, and then figure out what happens after that. I just don't know that that's going to be what's best for anyone at this point. So we're going to have to wait and see what the Kings can get for him. But I think the Marvin Bagley situation is kind of what it is at this point. He does not want to be in Sacramento. He's made that pretty clear by everything. And you know what? He's right. It is his Twitter. He can say whatever he wants. But at some point, someone probably should remind him that he represents his family. He represents the NBA as a whole. He represents the city of Sacramento. He represents his teammates. And so you can't just say whatever you want and think that there won't be repercussions. And, you know, he's feeling that backlash, which, you know, he's felt a couple of times now.
I have no problem with saying it how I'm about to say it, because, you know, my first interaction with Earl, you know, he disrespected me. So, I mean, respect is out the window. I'm not trying to disrespect him, but I'm just going to be blunt. He was terrible at his job. He was a terrible host, right? He was garbage. That's just my opinion. But I will say this. There was one time when it felt like, to your point, James, Earl tried to say, hey, I think it was the question was like, hey, you know, how do you look at your first 3-4 years in the league? And, you know, you talk about Sacramento and haven't made the playoffs in 15 years. I'll give him credit there. He tried to steer into like a specific question for a specific answer. And to your point, James, Marvin sidestepped that like a Euro step. He wanted nothing to do. There was almost to the point where it was intentional to not mention the Kings or Sacramento. What this is like impossible, probably, but I'm gonna ask you the impossible. What do you think he feels like he's getting out of all this by going about everything this way? Does he think that it's more likely he'll be traded? Does he think he's raising his trade value? What's he getting out of all this?
You know, I think you're right. That was probably the best sidestep of his career.
Seriously.
You know, the best Euro step that he's performed on or off the court. He just avoided the question 100%. And to be honest with you, what do you get out of this? I think in some weird way, I mean, I don't know if you guys just held on for like the first 14 minutes or whatever. he was promoting some sort of documentary where he's trying to show how he can be both a basketball player and like a rap artist. And that's fine. I mean, he's starting his own production company. But again, like, I don't know that anyone is telling him this, but no one in the NBA, in real NBA circles, cares about that other stuff. You have to do your job first. And you know, I get that he's had some setbacks and all this stuff, but, you know, and I've never been one who has a problem with him having outside stuff. I mean, De'Aaron Fox plays a ton of video games. Right. That's all right with me. You know, Halliburton has his whole Top Shot thing, but, you know, he tries to get into fashion stuff. He does a lot, you know. Harrison Barnes has all of his stuff that he does off the court. So, like, these guys deserve to have a life outside of the game, that's for sure. The problem is, like, you still have to understand that you represent Sacramento. And until you represent Sacramento, you know, then I don't know. I mean, maybe at some point someone should show him a list of the players who came to Sacramento and this was their last stop. And you're not guaranteed anything at all. And just because you're the former number two overall pick, I mean, ask the Coke machine about that. I mean, Derek Williams is playing overseas somewhere, I saw, but I mean, he's been out of the league since he was like 25, 26. I mean, Jabari Parker is on to like his eighth team. He was second, the number two pick in the draft too. Like, look, there is nothing guaranteed in this world. And the last thing you want to be is not only injured and not being able to take that next step as a player, but also to be a distraction. And you know, that's where a lot of time, I mean, we're in the dog days of summer, so I don't know how much of a distraction you can be. The franchise is just going to ignore it. But, I mean, you still have to think of some of these things because the next team might not put up with this at all. And if this is how you play and this is how your dad plays, then we'll see how it goes.
And your publicist and your trainer and a variety of others. James Hamm, Kings Insider, with us here on D'Lo and KC. How did we get here, though? Like, you know, getting to the point of Marvin, you know, moving on, the Kings don't want him here. He doesn't want to be here. He obviously has, he appears to have these contentious feelings towards, maybe it's the organization, maybe it's the fans, maybe it's a combination of the two. Just how did we get to this point with him?
You know, it was a steady stream here. I think, you know, I've said this before, Sacramento fans are so passionate, right? And someone was talking about this on Twitter earlier. I can't remember who it was, so I'm not going to misquote. But they're talking about how Twitter is such a small portion of the Kings fan base, but it's the noisy portion of the fan base.
That's society.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the players feel that, but that really doesn't represent the whole. And I think a lot of people, they want Marvin Bagley to work out here. I've said it like a million times. If you look at the draft still, he's still probably one of the top guys that actually fit what they're trying to do. You know, he's a guy who can stretch it, shoot the three a little bit. He can go down to the post. He can rebound. He can run the floor like a gazelle. Like, there should be a way that this should work out. But my point was that Sacramento fan base on Twitter specifically, they have a way of turning on one player every time and really, really going at that player. And I know Willie Cauley-Stein felt it like the final 2 years here. But as soon as Willie was gone, it's like almost every bit of it transferred to Marvin Bagley as soon as he got hurt in his second year. I mean, he broke his thumb in the first game of the season, and you could see the shift happening. They were looking for someone else to pile on, and Marvin became that guy. And I said it then, like, it does not do you any good as a fan base to just destroy a young player. You know, even if it was Willie, Willie was 24, 25 years old. He's still a young guy. You're just destroying his confidence. Like, what's the end game? Because, I mean, the end game is he leaves, I guess. But where does that put you? Like, at some point, you're supposed to be a fan, and a fan is supposed to support and sometimes hold a franchise accountable. But support, that's you know, fandom is about cheering for somebody. And I just think that right now that so quickly people turn and it becomes like, who's public enemy number one this year? And, you know, if you're looking around, who's it going to be this coming year? If Marvin's not here, there's going to be somebody, because there always is. There's always the Ike Diagu that everyone wants to overpay, which, you know, we'll see that again this summer when people want Terrence Davis to make $9 million a year or something.
So tradition, but unlike any other.
Yeah, but there's always a player that just really becomes the scapegoat for what's happening. And I think maybe if it's not Marvin, it will likely be Luke Walton, because even though he's not a player, he seems to be – he's taken some ownership of that role for some reason in this fan base as well.
Can't imagine that at all.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, just
Luke, that's my sarcasm tone.
Luke doesn't get any heat. He doesn't get any heat here in this city. I don't even know where you would get that from, James.
Certainly not on D'Lo and Casey.
You know, one thing, and we can get off Marvin after this, or we can keep talking. It doesn't matter. But one thing that I take away from this whole episode with Marvin Bagley and the whole team Bagley and everything, and I think is a huge detriment to what's gone on with him, is there. I think he's got the wrong circle of people to, as I like to say, keep it real with him, keep it a stack with him. You know, you got the guy that hosted, who he had his pom poms on. You got people on Twitter saying things that just aren't true about he never plays in the fourth quarter and not taking. I'm never the type of guy that says, you know, this player should just be real with himself and say that he sucks. Like, no, that's not realistic, and nobody should have to say that. But you have to be real with yourself. And if Marvin's talent level and what he can do on the court, what he's the ability that he has, nobody should take that away from him. But he should be able to look in the mirror and be like, you know what, I haven't lived up to what I think I can do in my career. You know what I'm saying? I haven't produced the way I expect myself to produce and the way I should produce. And regardless of what the reasoning is or whatever the case may be, maybe if I don't agree with people saying that I'm a bust or anything like that, it's not out of the realm of possibility to understand why people come to that conclusion. Not, oh, it's just their fault. It's Luke's fault. It's the organization's fault. Like, I haven't gotten it done. Do you think that in your time dealing with the Kings, and I know we lost the whole year being backstage and all this other stuff, is there anybody in his life that could say, hey, Marvin, I love you, bro, but you got to be better? It's not everybody else's fault. It's not even necessarily your fault. It's just what it is. You've got to be better.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there is. I mean, is there someone within the Kings organization? Sure. I mean, I'm sure Rico Hines has said it. I'm sure Bobby Jackson has said it. I'm sure that his conversations with Luke Walton has been very frank. Like, look, if you want to play in the fourth quarter, I need you to do this, this, and this. And until you do that, I'm not going to put you in there unless I have to, you know. And that's where it kind of became like, there are times this year where he played in the fourth quarter, but there are other times, like, I understand there were times where he did not play at all in the fourth quarter. You know, he averages 26 minutes a night for a reason. And it's not just because he doesn't play in the fourth quarter. You have to earn those minutes in the fourth quarter. The lineup that the Kings put on the floor in the fourth quarter was productive and was working. And so at a certain point, you have to cheer on your teammates, and you have to understand that if there's going to be a moment where you need to go in, you better be ready. Yeah. And you better show up, you know? And I, you know, again, I think the biggest problem has always been that it's a lack of experience. The only way to get experience is to play. He's missed so much time that it's hard to get that experience. And so we end up in this bitter cycle where he's starting over most of the time. And while he's gotten bigger and stronger, that doesn't mean that he understands the game better. And we're still waiting for that moment where it all comes together. And it might happen, and it might happen somewhere else. It's likely, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen somewhere else. But he's still a serviceable player. I mean, we've talked about this a couple of times. He averaged with 14 points and 8 rebounds a game. And that's without having any experience, without being able to stay on the floor. And so you hope that at some point it does all come together for him. Because, again, I don't have anything against Marvin Bagley. Mm. I think he's a good kid. I've spent quite a bit of time with him, like in the locker room, having conversations, you know, all the events and stuff that we do. Like, I don't have anything against him at all. I just, at some point, you're right, there has to be some sort of accountability. And I'll also say this, the Kings haven't done anything wrong to him at all. Mm. Like, I mean, he was the starting power forward to open this season when, in all honesty, the team was better last year when Nemanja Bjelica played. They gave him the starting job. They gave him every opportunity to be successful. And, you know, it hasn't worked out. And it's not too late. I think there is a way that this thing could be worked out, but it's going to take a lot of sitting down, a lot of conversations. And then, like what you're talking about, a lot of honesty. Because, you know, we talked about Jason Thompson a couple of weeks ago. Like, he was still, like, in his eighth year wondering when he was getting 12 shots a game. And it's like, oh, man, you're never getting 12 shots a game.
Right.
That's not going to happen. That's not who you are as a player. Now, Marvin, that can happen for. But at the same time, like, you have to, at year three, going into year four, you should already know who you are as a player. It should just be refining who and what you are.
Yeah. Real quick, Dame. Just wanted to say, it reminded me of a time, and James, you might have seen this before, but I'll never forget. I was back after the game, and I think the Kings had lost to the Clippers. This was like 2 years ago. Lost to the Clippers. De'Aaron didn't play well. He had like 12 points or whatever the case may be. And Aaron Fox was backstage, and Aaron was kind of, he was holding court. He was just talking loud enough so people around could hear, right? And Aaron was like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is ridiculous. People want to say, they want to talk about the coach. They want to talk about the GM. It ain't their fault. It's the point guard. The point guard ain't getting everybody what they need to do. He ain't taking a shot. Obviously, he was talking about his son. And he was like, he needs to play better. The point guard needs to play better. And that was him talking about his son. And I couldn't imagine anybody on Team Bagley having that type of dialogue privately, let alone publicly, to say, yo, he got to play better.
Yeah, Team Bagley has said stuff to the media while we're waiting to get into the locker room, speaking loudly like that, but not with the same content. Mm-hmm. He said stuff to the media, and that doesn't go over well at all. Mm-hmm. I'm not someone who would take that at all. Like, he wants to chirp, I'll chirp right back. I don't have any problems. You know, again, I cover Marvin Bagley III. I don't cover Marvin Bagley, whatever, junior or whatever he is, a second. Mm-hmm. I just don't. And to me, that, again, at a certain point, it's the AAU thing, I think. I don't know. I mean, I coached soccer for a long time. I've seen crazy stuff happen on the field. I've seen parents start to run out when their kid gets fouled hard and you got to pull parents back. I've seen all kinds of crazy stuff. But at a certain point, you have to let someone make their own way. Mm-hmm. And you have to, you know, he's responsible for his career. And so I hope the best for him. I do. And whether that's in Sacramento or it's elsewhere, like, look, at a certain point, you either are or you aren't one of the cornerstones of a franchise. Mm-hmm. And we're getting closer and closer to the point where he probably is not one of the cornerstones of the Kings franchise. But that doesn't mean he can't be a cornerstone for someone else's franchise. Other teams are not going to want this baggage, though. Mm-hmm. They're just not. And I mean, it players have been run out of the league for less. It is what it is. So, you know, I hope they all figure it out.
Kings insider James Hamm, NBC Sports, with us here on D'Lo and KC. James Hamm, of course, the ratings getter, as numbers skyrocket when James Hamm joins us. I want to bring you into a conversation we were just having, James. Because Kenny hates DeAndre Ayton.
See?
So we were talking about, if you swapped out Rashawn Holmes for DeAndre Ayton, would the Phoenix Suns be the same?
Man, I don't know. Ayton's been really good in the playoffs. I like, coming into the draft, I wasn't an Ayton fan at all. But the fact that he went number one in that draft, to me, when it was happening, didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Kings would have taken him at number two if he fell to them. Actually, I know they wouldn't have taken him at number two. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I think Phoenix gets off the hook. And as we're talking, DeAndre Ayton is on my TV right in front of me. Anyway, like, I just think
one?
That
I know you have a sea of TVs.
Oh,
in front
I do have.
You
a
got
sea
it like
TV.
That.
TV
got
four,
like
TV
that?
Five.
Yeah, I think we have 11 TVs in the house.
You said Ham's house is looking like the Replay Center. Is that what you said? What?
Yeah. So my bar, certainly. Look, I think when I watched DeAndre Ayton play in college, he did not know how to set a screen at all. Any screen he set was from like 8 feet away, and like, you got to bring the dude to me. all he could do was pin down his man and call for the ball over the top. I just think that we're getting this who deserves more credit thing here with the Suns. Is it Chris Paul or is it Monty Williams? And I think when you see the development of Ayton specifically, that is Chris Paul has created him into the type of big man that works with him. And it's the best thing that's ever happened to DeAndre Ayton's career. Chris Paul is just, he's going to mean the world to who he becomes as a player. I mean, basically he's become like somewhat of a DeAndre Jordan, but with just more skill. Mm-hmm. And so that's good. And so I don't mind Ayton. I just think that, like, again, if you would have put Ayton in Sacramento, or if you would have had Ayton in Phoenix, but without Chris Paul, we wouldn't see this type of development. Mm-hmm. And it's because Chris Paul is, Michael Malone told me years ago, he is the greatest leader in the NBA. There's not even one close to him. And that was with Michael Malone, coming off a long stint in Cleveland working with LeBron. It's not like he hadn't worked with like great leaders. Right. Like, hey, this dude is unbelievable. And while people do not like him on the outside, and a lot of fans don't like him, they don't like the antics, they don't like all the garbage that he does on the court, his teammates love him and adore him, and they listen to him. And I think that's the biggest thing for me. I think he's helped so much in that one player. The rest of the squad, I think they kind of were who they were. I mean, the whole Cameron Payne thing, I don't think anyone can make heads or tails out of that. All of a sudden, he's like a star, and he's just making so much money for himself every game. But Ayton specifically, I think, has been aided so much by Chris Paul.
James, can I ask you a Kings question? This is kind of a
maybe.
Look at me getting my Earl on with a question like that. But I asked Damian a question the other day on the show. This is kind of like off the wall. This is one where like maybe we're picking nits a little bit here. But there's four guys I looked at that are like on the back part of the Kings roster. And I said, Justin James, Robert Woodard, Jamias Ramsey, and Lewis King. And I said, pick one of those four guys that you were like, yo, we can come back a year and a half later and be like, man, Monty found him. That was a crazy pick. Obviously, he didn't find Justin James, but you get what I'm saying. And I said, Lewis King. Is that kind of crazy? There's something about Lewis King that intrigues me. Is that kind of a crazy thought?
No, I liked what I saw from Lewis King and the little small sample size that we got. But again, we can go back to the Ike Diagu statement that I made earlier. There's always somebody. There's always somebody who in the last five games of the season, because the Kings haven't made the playoffs for 15 straight years, who gets an opportunity that he normally would not get, and then he shines in that opportunity. I mean, I remember what Scal just tore apart the Suns in like an April game, and everyone was so excited about Scal. And a lot of it is, it's just that the defense isn't the same. The gameplay isn't the same. You're playing one night, you're playing a playoff team who's gearing up. The next night you're playing a team that's literally trying to lose because they want their lottery picks higher. And so I think at the end of the season, it's hard to analyze anyone and try to figure out what you got. I'll just say this, like you could have a worse potential player, there are worse players. And so it's good to at least have some sort of talent base that you're going to get in your system, who's going to be a two-way player, who's going to get to go to practices, who's going to challenge, a guy like De'Aaron Fox as a bigger guy who can play the three, but also he can play the one. So you're going to have different looks for Fox and Halliburton go up against. Mm-hmm. So I think having him here is a good thing. But I kind of get what you're saying, and it goes back to what I've said a million times. Like, you walk into the season, and you have Jamias Ramsey, Daquan Jeffries, who was hurt, Justin James, and Robert Woodard. None of those guys were really ready to play at all this season, and that was four of your 15. We're not going to touch the rest of the roster. Let's just stop there. Like, how are you supposed to compete? You need two of those guys and a couple of two-way players. And so those four guys, one thing, but the Kings dragged that into their standard roster last year. And you can't have that many players who who aren't experienced enough to help you. And if you, you have injuries, to step up and fill a role, any role, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, so I get what you're saying there. And I do like Luke King. But I also, you know, I like Chimezie Metu too. I think he's got
that's our guy.
Yeah. And I also, you know, I dig, I dig what, Damian Jones did. I think that, you know, you're getting some solid minutes out of some of these guys, but again, like, were they playing against the top of the top? And chances are the answer is no, if you went back and looked at their minutes really closely.
Well, the resumption of the G League in its proper form, I guess, will that help with these guys next year getting more, you know, even if they're not getting as much run in an NBA game, at least they're getting out on a basketball floor every day?
Yeah, man, to be honest with you, this season wasn't fair at all. Sure. I mean, because, you know, it's not even just that you had, like, Jamias and you had Robert, right? You have these two young kids that are just coming out. They got drafted in, what, like, September? Yeah. Like everything was abbreviated. There was no... So right now, these guys are all working out together. You're seeing videos of them. You're seeing pictures of them all over the place, right? Yeah. I think a bunch of them are in L.A. right now. A bunch of them will be in Sacramento. Normally, players get into Sacramento in September and, like, first week of September, maybe even last week of August. They start playing pickup games against each other, having a good time, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, whatever they can do. So that's a typical offseason where they have, like, by the time you get to September 25th or 26th or 27th, when media day and the first day of training camp hits, these guys have already been smack talking and playing against each other every day, all day, for like 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. You know, it just depends on the season. All of that was scrapped. And so these guys are not only getting that, but they're also going to get that from July 1 to August 31st, where they're working with a professional training staff. They're going to summer league. They're working with the coaching staff to learn the nuances of the offense and the terminology and all that stuff. So, like, those guys, to me, they didn't have a chance. And so I like Bobby Jackson's going to be in Stockton. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have some continuity there. The terminology will all be the same. Everything, the offensive sets and stuff should be similar. So I think it is good. And I think these guys, they need a reboot. And I like that the Kings gave, you know, both Jamias and Robert, I think they gave them 2 and 3 year deals. And so they at least have a chance here to shine and figure out who they are as players at the G League level, and then come up when you need them to fill spots.
Mock draft 8.0 from James Hamm. I gotta say, James, I'm not gonna do a James Hamm and give you a thumbs down, but I wasn't feeling the guy that you selected. Make your case for Josh Giddey. It's Giddey, right? That's how you say it?
It's Giddey, yeah. I love him. Your case. To me, he's my dark horse at 9. I just think, like, look, he's played professionally in Australia, so you know he's playing against grown men, mm-hmm. right? He's playing against some tough dudes, and we saw what that did to, what was it, RJ Hampton and to LaMelo Ball last year. Like, they came into the league. Both of them actually played better than you would expect, especially Ball. But Hampton showed some promise too. Like, there's something to me about playing in a league and then showing incremental, like, development as you get through a season. By the end of the season, he was almost averaging a triple-double a night. Like, the guy has all kinds of skills. So while his offensive game is, at this point, is maybe a little Ricky Rubio-esque, the fact that he's averaging, like 7 rebounds and 7 assists a game from a point guard position, to me, that's, I like it. I like it because he didn't do that against 18-year-old college players. He did that against grown men in a professional league. And so I dig him. He's not going to play spectacular defense early in his career. He needs to get stronger. He needs to develop his three-point shot. But, like, the delivery, the mechanics, the court vision, everything, if you can have him as the 3 and doing a bunch of off-ball stuff and then finding players as not the primary ball handler, I think you could really start to develop him. And then, you know, he can play some lead guard at times. He can play some too. So I like his versatility. But, yeah, he is my dark horse. I don't know that that's where the Kings will go because I've talked about this. I think Monty likes long, athletic wings. If that were Jeff Petrie sitting there, with the number nine pick. I think he would be a little higher on Jeff Petrie's list than maybe Monty's list, but I could be wrong. And you know, he's going to be in the discussion like a lot of players are. I think there are maybe five or six players in that discussion.
Yeah. Obviously, this is true for the year before as well, but is the, you know, we had a tournament this year, but have you talked to any scouts about kind of the evaluation process and the difficulty of it? Obviously, looking at the G League guys is a little bit different, the Ignite guys, but like college players, has that process proved to be difficult for scouts? Has it proved to be difficult for you in studying these guys?
I don't think so, because, you know, there was enough games here this season where you did get a good look. I think we have to look at everything that happened, both pro and at the college level, and even European and you know, Australian League level, all of that stuff. You have to look at it through the lens of COVID. It's unfortunate, but like this is an era that we're going to live through. And once we get through the other side, we'll be able to look back and say, okay, how much did it slow the growth of specific players? But at this point, like, look, this is one of the best drafts we've seen in decades. I mean, this is like a 2003 draft and a 96 draft. This like, this is one of those drafts that is going to fill the league up with star level players. And I think that they're like in the top five or six. I think there's a group there, but there's always somebody else, always, that from seven all the way to, you know, 28, right, there's always somebody else that jumps up and is so much better than you thought. And this draft has like a lot of those guys that you look at and you're like, okay, I can see who you probably are as a player. But, you know, like, again, I just wrote on Keon Johnson, like he's a guy who could be there when the Kings draft puts up a 48-inch vert. You start looking for player comparisons and there's a super high level and there's a super low level with him. And, you know, he's going to land probably somewhere in between, but he could easily be like a DeMar DeRozan or a guy like Jaylen Brown. He also could, you know, kind of just be a specialist like an Iman Shumpert or, you know, like a guy like Ben McLemore that doesn't ever quite find a way to connect all of the high level skills. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of these guys that are hiding in this particular draft that could just completely jump off the board and be so much better, like Halliburton better, but, you know, who knows? Yeah. I mean, I think all the way through the tail end of this draft, the tail end of the first round, there are players that you're like, okay, I wouldn't mind having a Cam Thomas on my team. He's going to score, right? You know, the Chris Duarte, like, I mean, it's like a Dylan Brooks clone. Someone cloned Dylan Brooks.
That's my
and
guy.
Ran him through, he ran him through Oregon and is like, here he is. You know, so it just really does depend on what you're looking for. But I think this is a strong draft. It's a good draft to have three picks because I think like a guy like Jalen Johnson could go, you know, anywhere between 15 and like 25 in this draft. And he's got top five talent. Yeah. But, you know, if I've got three picks, I can gamble on him. If I've got one pick at number nine, I don't think I can gamble. So that's what I mean. There's a lot of like nuances to this draft.
Thanks, James. I'm going to spend the next 3 days calming down Kenny with the Dylan Brooks comparison.
That's
there.
My boy, Dylan Brooks, right there. He's crazy, but that's my boy. That's my boy, Dylan Brooks. Real quick, before we get you out of here, James, real quick, I just got to ask. So everything that you just said about the draft, I agree with how deep it is, a lot of game changers. Does that change your mind at all, like it has for myself, about the possibility of trading a pick? The Kings trading
a
pick?
No, it doesn't, because at a certain point, you just can't keep going, doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. And I know it's not been Monty, and his first draft was spectacular. But at the same time, there are very few ways. There are only three ways to improve yourself in the NBA, and the Kings are basically not involved in one of those. And so it's either the draft or trade. And so while I think that there is talent, I also think that because of the depth of this draft and the quality of this draft, that number nine pick is going to have more value than, you know, the number five pick in certain drafts and the number four pick in other drafts. I think that there is enough quality and depth in this draft to get a real player in return for somebody who's looking to take a step back and doesn't have sort of that feeling of emergency that the Kings should have because it's been so long and they just can't get over the hump. I mean, if not, like, again, Keon Johnson's a guy like, hey, look, 3 years from now, he could be, you know, the second or third best player in this draft. He could also be a bust. But, you know, normally when you're drafting in the top 10, you're looking for that like incredible talent or the bust, the boom bust potential, right?
Yeah.
I just, if you're the Kings, I just don't think you can keep waiting. You cannot wait for another player to sit here and develop and develop and develop. And so I think it does change their outlook.
Gotcha.
James Hamm, Kings Insider, NBC Sports.
The
James,
goat.
Tremendous stuff as always, my friend. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.